Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African American books and gifts full of culture diversity. The total African American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com. Malik Books is what you
need. I'm Travis Smiley. This is KBLA Talk 1580. Our phone number 1-800-920-1580. 1-800-920-1580. The song stylings of Donald Lawrence. I am healed. In this hour, internationally acclaimed music therapist, Dr. DeForia Lane, founder of Art and Music Therapy at the University Hospitals Case Medical Center in Cleveland, joins us for a conversation about music therapy and how we can use music for physical and emotional healing. Now, in truth, if you grew up in the right black church, I emphasize the right black church, you already know about music's healing effects. But today, a conversation rooted in the science of music as therapy with our honored guest, our featured guest, Dr. DeForia Lane. Before I commence this conversation with Dr. Lane, I want to play for you just the first couple of minutes of a powerful, and I do mean powerful, TED Talk that Dr. Lane gave some time ago. And I think when you hear the first couple of minutes of this audio of this TED Talk, you will understand why I am so delighted to have her on in conversation for the hour. Here now, Dr. DeForia Lane.
As a music therapist, one of the first experiences I had in intensive care unit was with a 20-year-old redhead who was brought into our hospital brain dead. She was several months pregnant, and our hospital decided to maintain her body on life support until the child could be safely delivered. And the intensive care nurse asked me to see the baby. She knew that the mother would never be able to provide any stimulation or nurture. Now, I know that music therapy is an evidenced profession, but I tell you, at that time, I could not remember anything anyone taught me about working with someone who had no brain activity. So when I was walking into the intensive care unit, I did not know what to expect. And when I pulled the curtain back, my legs were wobbling. I walked over to her bed, and I saw this little lump in the middle of her belly. And I just gently placed my hands right over that little lump. And I began to sing. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the tiny little baby in his hand. And that baby began to dance under my fingers.
Dr. Lane, pick that story up. The baby, as you sang, began to dance under your fingers. Tell me more.
Literally, I could feel little knees and elbows just kind of reaching out, punching through the skin of the mother's abdomen. And I sang a little faster, and only this time the nurse came in and hooked the mother up to some devices that could monitor her blood pressure, heart rate, and so forth. And as I sang faster, the mother's heart rate increased. And as I sang slower, the opposite happened. And the nurse was excited, and she said, "Oh my goodness, keep going, keep going." And subsequently, the baby would calm as I would slow down and just gently wave my hands back and forth, rub, you know, gently over the belly. And when that baby was born, I went to the operating room along with the doctors within several weeks. And when that baby was born, she did not cry. She sang. I heard this, kind of like an E flat, maybe, I don't know. And subsequently, when I would go, she was taken to the neonatal intensive care unit. And when I would go there, and she was fretful in the incubator, babies tend to, their oxygenation levels drop. They thrust their tongue. Their foreheads get very scrunched looking, and they splay their fingers. When you see those signs, you know a baby's under distress. So I would just go over. I would bend down right beside the incubator, and I would sing that same song, and the baby would quiet. I mean, to me, honestly, I had just become a music therapist, hadn't been certified very long, but the awesomeness of how a song can affect a human being is just, to me, a miracle. It's amazing. So, yeah.
Just getting started in this hour with our guest, Dr. DeForia Lane, the founder and now retired director of Art and Music Therapy at the University Hospital's Case Medical Center in Cleveland, Ohio. We'll spend the hour talking about music therapy for physical and emotional healing. You're listening to KBLA Talk 1580.
Be sure to like and follow Tavis Smiley at The Real Tavis Smiley.
And get Twitter updates
at Tavis Smiley. The conversation continues when we come forward.
Malik Books.
I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African-American books and gifts full of cultural diversity, the total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Looking for legitimate political discourse without the bear spray? Tune in and speak out. KBLA Talk 1580.
Dr. Lane, I want to back up just a bit because you mentioned a moment ago in the sharing of that story that at the moment or at that time, you had not been a music therapist licensed for very long. Let me just ask a personal question. How did you decide that this, in fact, was your calling, your vocation? I'm asking how you got in this lane to begin with, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Originally, my degree is in opera, University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. But my desire, though, to sing, I wanted more than just an audience, and you know, the clapping and the competitiveness in terms of auditioning and so forth. I had some marvelous opportunities, but there was something missing. I wanted to really connect with people. And yes, you can do that from a stage, and I experienced that beautifully. But it wasn't until I thought back about my church experiences, my experiences at school, that I saw how music could change people, literally transform how they felt, what they did. I'll never forget we had an usher, very strict, stern-looking gentleman. But every time one of our beautiful soloists would sing a particular song, this man would melt. I mean, tears would just flow. And I wondered, what was it that did that? Or women who were very arthritic coming into the church and sitting down in a pew, and it was painful to even watch them walk. But you let a gospel song, you know, waft from the mouths of our gospel choir, and those women acted as though their limbs were as fluid as water. They could move and walk. So honestly, I think there was something planted in this head and heart of mine that said music has the ability to transform. I want to know how. And I heard a man. I had the opportunity to go to China and with an international aid organization. And he told a story that his parents had been converted by Christians who'd come from America. But as a result, he was confined, arrested, taken to a concentration camp, you know, in short, because of his faith. He refused to say, "I don't believe." But he was placed in a portion of the camp that was horrendous. He had to shovel manure in knee deep every day, miles from the central part because of the stench. But he said he loved being there alone because he could sing and pray out loud. And the song that he sang, "I come to the garden alone while the dew is still on the roses." Now, if you can imagine that song coming to mind as a result of being in a place like that, I mean, so again, I was reinforced with the thought that this is something that can be purposeful, and my life has never been the same.
I'm still with "I come to the garden alone while the dew is still on the roses." I want you to continue. "In the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known." One of the great hymns. I'm so glad you shared just a bit of that. I took me back to my little Pentecostal church in Indiana. I know it well. Let me just ask you. You said a lot that I want to unpack here in just a second, but I'm still stuck on this. I admit, this notion that you had to decide what kind of audience you wanted to entertain. I put the word "entertain" in air quotes. I think you take my point. I'm curious. I want to get just a bit philosophical here. I'm curious as to what you learned about finding the right audience, about using your talent in the right way. Every one of us, certainly these days, wants an audience. Everybody's got a podcast. Everybody's got a Twitter account. Everybody's got something that they're trying to push out to somebody else. We all think we're stars these days, and everybody is searching for an audience, and we all want likes. The goal these days is to get as many likes as you can get. I was in a conversation not long ago about teen suicide, and oftentimes these kids end up killing themselves because they really fundamentally don't get enough likes in their lives. You can take that a variety of ways, but I'm just curious. I don't want to color it more than that, but I'm just curious as to what you learned as you were figuring out your vocation and your calling about finding, about serving, there's a better word than entertaining, about serving the right audience. Tell me about that.
I believe it's because I saw some of the shallowness sometimes in some of the people around me. Now, that's to say they weren't gifted, very talented. Some of them could sing rings around, you know, the best. But their mindset was just like you described, me. I get ahead. What can I do? And so I didn't want that. I wanted to affect people in a way that was something they could gain, could benefit by, the audience, that is. And I saw how I was singing the lead role in a Puccini opera called Sor Angelica. And The storyline is a teenager was thrust into a convent because she had become pregnant and her parents wanted to move her away from anything that would, you know, cast aspersions on them. And she had the baby there, but she was never allowed to hold it. And on bended knee, the aria of the opera is called Senza Mamma, Without Mother. Mm-hmm. And she was apologizing to her baby that she had not been able to love her and hold her and be what the child needed, a mother. And she was pleading for forgiveness. And I remember thinking, when I finished the aria, mm-hmm. no one applauded. Nothing. The auditorium was completely silent. And I said, oh, mercy, what did I do? Is the song flat? Did I not emote enough? What is it? Everybody's supposed to clap after the, you know, the aria. And there was this, like, being suspended in space. My coach told me, he said, DeForia, you don't know what happened? I said, no, I don't. Tell me. And he said, people didn't want the moment to end. Mm. They were held kind of in this moment of suspended awe, and they dare not break that with cheap applause. And so he put his finger on something, and I think it's because people understood the plea of a hurting nun, of a hurting woman. And it was at that point that I said, okay, I wonder who else can be helped in situations like this. And we had the opportunity to go to nursing homes and a developmental center for those who were handicapped. When I saw how much these residents or students at these developmental centers were drawn to music, it was a no-brainer. Mm. This is what I was meant to do. And so I changed my stage for a stage with a different audience. Mm.
I gave a speech some years ago about the distinct difference between chasing success and chasing greatness. They ain't the same thing. You can be successful without ever being great, but you'll never be great without being successful. Success and greatness are not the same thing. Dr. King put it this way: any of us can be great because any of us can serve. All it takes is a heart full of grace and a soul that's generated by love. And I was saying to this audience that day, and I love your phrase, cheap applause, you got to make sure you're chasing the right thing. You got to make sure you are addressing the right audience. And to your beautiful phrase, I'm going to hold on to it the rest of the day. You don't want to be angling for the cheap applause. If you're angling for cheap applause, then you ain't discovered your vocation. You ain't found your calling if it's all about the cheap applause. And so I'm glad I asked that question. You never know around here when you ask questions where the guest is going to take it. But I'm glad you took the question and wrestled it to the ground as I knew you would. And I'm going to hold on to that again the rest of the day. You got to be careful about that cheap applause. It'll get you in trouble. I'm looking at my clock here. I got just a couple minutes before news and traffic and sports. But let me ask you right quick. We can continue on the other side if need be. And I suspect need will be. But since you first have this epiphany, as it were, in a black church, at some point, you had to, I don't want to say wrestle with, but certainly if not wrestle with, reconcile your faith with science. Say a word to me about that right quick, please.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I found in studying at the college that I received my degree from was that music triggers our immune function so that when those women who were arthritic would be able to move, and their mood would be shouting and hang, you know, throwing up their hands, and their attitude, talk about a new attitude, it would all be there. It was because there was endorphins and enkephalins and serotonin and dopamine, all of those bodies' natural chemicals were being stimulated. And okay, that's the physiological, but we also know, and if you've been part of the Pentecostal church, you know that can change the way you think about something. You talk about a new attitude, it can give you that. And it, I think it peels back enough to of the doubt and cynicism in us to let a bit of the light shine through. So I think music has the ability to help us think beyond ourselves.
Just getting started, really, in this conversation with our guest this hour, Dr. DeForia Lane. When we come forward after news, traffic, and sport, I want to get back to the story about the mother and the baby. You heard her tee up the fact that when the baby was born, I'm curious as to what happened to that baby. I'm curious, as you are, as what happened to that mother. And there's a great deal more to talk about. But since she mentioned Puccini, I feel now like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption. I'm going to lock the door and turn this up. You're listening to KBLA Talk 1580.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African-American books and gifts full of cultural diversity, the total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com. Malik Books is what you
need. Started that thing, we had to end it, right? You can't step on the queen that way. So for those who don't know the story, this is back in 1998 at the Grammys, and the great Pavarotti was to sing that night his iconic performance piece, Nessun Dorma, in 1998. At the last minute, Pavarotti takes ill and cannot perform. And literally, hours before the broadcast, they ask the Queen, Aretha Franklin, if she will step in for Pavarotti. And what you heard was Aretha stand in at the last moment for Pavarotti, and she slayed it at the Grammy Awards in 1998. If you've never seen that performance in its entirety, do yourself a favor, Google it. Just Aretha Franklin, Nessun Dorma, 1998 Grammy Awards, it'll pop up, and just watch that thing, and then watch the audience seated breathlessly, watching the Queen do what only the Queen can do. That's why I don't argue with these young folk today. Ain't nobody ever going to be colder than the Queen. I don't care who you put on the list. I got Aretha Franklin as the coldest to ever do it because she could sing anything. But that night at the Grammys, she slayed it. The rest, as they say, is history. Our guest in this hour is Dr. DeForia Lane, the founder and retired director now of Art and Music Therapy at the University Hospital's Case Medical Center in Cleveland, and we are continuing our conversation now about the amazing work that she has done over the years with music therapy for physical and emotional healing. We started this hour, in case you've just tuned in, you missed a great half hour already, so that's why we do a podcast around here, right? So if you are just tuned in now, make sure later tonight, tomorrow, you check out the podcast of this program on our platforms and listen to this entire hour with Dr. DeForia Lane. Dr. Lane, we started this conversation about 39 minutes ago, playing a few moments of your brilliant and powerful and arresting TED Talk about your work and witness, and you were telling the story of this pregnant mother who was brain dead, and what you learned about singing and sharing with this baby that was in her belly. Before I move on right quick, what happened to that baby? What happened to that mother?
The baby not only lived but thrived. She is in her 30s now. In terms of the mother, she literally gave her lungs during that operation. After the baby was born, they took lungs and someone else received them. They took her pancreas and that was given to someone. She gave life to multiple people that day. And the grandmother, the mother's mother, raised that child. And I would love to see her to this day. But I have to add, one of the other things that happened was it alerted the doctors and nurses as to how music therapy could be used. And at that point, I received multiple referrals to see other patients, mm-hmm. one of whom was giving birth to quintuplets. And they said she had been on fertility drugs for a long, long time, and everything had failed. But this one time it worked. The problem was after she gave birth, she was diagnosed with inoperable cancer, and which would mean, obviously, if there was no cure for this, that she would not be able to raise those babies, she and her husband. But she opted for some unconventional treatment, and so I worked with her while she was there. And so what do you do for someone? One of the babies died. She was grieving terribly for that. And to be honest, Tavis, we cried together. Mm. People know when, you know, they don't want to be therapized. They don't want to be the object of somebody's sympathy. They want to be heard as a person and listened to. So I ended up, we ended up talking. I said, tell me what you want for your four babies. And I did not hesitate from talking about the baby she had lost either, because she needed to. But I would go up to the neonatal intensive care unit and I would sing to each one of those babies in incubators, and then go back and tell her what had happened, because she was unable to leave her room and they couldn't bring the babies down. And I don't know whether this is permissible to say on your show, but most of the time when I'd sing to the babies, they would pass gas. Mm-hmm. Do you hear me?
I
mean, here I am thinking, oh, I'm going to do something. These babies are going to react with, you know, smiles or, you know, and just the opposite. But when I went back to tell her, I was honest about it, she laughed. It was the first time in quite a bit of time that she found something to laugh at. And we created songs for each of the babies and that sort of thing. But in short, the first baby that I had contact with in the womb led to multiple other instances where other babies and their moms and dads were exposed to what music therapy could do. Yeah. And they certainly grew my heart.
Yeah, I heard you pause earlier when you were mentioning this notion of sympathy, and I the pause was pregnant. Pardon the pun; it was a pregnant pause, and I get why it was there, because what you were, I think, trying to say, and I feel you on this, and I think it's important that we remind ourselves of this. There's a distinct difference between sympathy and empathy, mm-hmm. and people most often don't want your sympathy. What they'd prefer is your empathy. Sympathy obviously is feeling sorry for somebody. Empathy is putting yourself in their shoes and trying to understand the journey that they are trying to navigate. And so I always mm-hmm. choose empathy over sympathy. And I heard that pause and want to just put a finer point on that, if that's all right. And if it ain't, I just did it anyway. So respectfully, we're going to move on. Let me circle back to this notion of faith and science that we were unpacking before the news and traffic and sports break. One quick follow-up on that, and I got to move on. But I'm wondering, again, how you navigated that, because you started out sharing with us how you learned essentially of the power of music in a black church. Now, I'm thinking about this. In my little Pentecostal church, we call that the Holy Ghost. When the Holy Ghost kicks in, you know, the mm-hmm. Bible says, quench not the spirit. When the Holy Ghost kicks in, it ain't cute, but it'll make that arthritic condition take a back seat, right? It will empower you in that moment with stuff you didn't know you had. But that's inside of a black mm-hmm. church. You know, have never, you know, walked away from that or denied any of that, but you have also moved into the area of science. So, when we come forward in just a moment, I want to ask you what you have then over the years learned about the science of music as therapy for physical and emotional healing. Again, I really am curious as to what you can share with us in that regard. And there are a few other things I want to address with our guest, Dr. DeForia Lane, when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
We've got a lot to talk about.
Good thing we've got 3 hours.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African-American books and gifts full of culture diversity. The total African-American experience that brings a world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Conversations that matter. You're listening to Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
Dr. DeForia Lane, tell me about the science of music therapy.
I learned that music is both an art and a science. In the church, you're right. People aren't interested necessarily in the science part. But when I became a part of university hospitals in Cleveland, doctors needed data. They wanted to understand the mechanism. What did it do systemically to the body? They had patients who had heart conditions, and though they knew how music could affect their mood and increase it, they didn't want me going in there rousing them to the extent where they'd have another cardiac arrest or they had patients whose blood pressure was just off the charts. And they thought, you know, one doctor came in one day, I remember, in intensive care, and he saw I was singing quietly to this person and their blood pressure literally was just dropping. And he didn't see that, but he turned to the nurse and said, "What is she doing in there singing? Doesn't she know the person is comatose and they can't hear her?" And the nurse very quietly said, "Doc, look at the monitor, what the heart rate is doing." And he saw it and did an about face and left, never said another word. What I found that if doctors, patients experienced the turnarounds that they had hoped for medically, if I were a part of that, then they were believers. And even though they may not understand what happened, they would be able to, they tell me, go see my patient up there on, you know, this particular floor. So once I expressed a desire to do research, they came on board. I mean, so I was able to plug into their expertise. They knew what tests to take. How do I measure if I use earphones for a patient throughout their surgery? I wanted to know if they're listening to music of their choice, and that's the music that helps us most, that to which we respond to best is what we like most. Then they might use less anesthesia. Now, and any doctor would love for that, because the more you use, the longer you use it, the more complications that could occur. So if you can get a patient in and out with less anesthesia, less time on that operating table, just because you're playing music of their choice, they wanted to know about that. So by George, they said, "Yeah, we'll do the research with you." And as a result, the outcome was very positive. It was significant. There was less anesthesia. A patient rated their own levels of anxiety pre and post surgery with as much less when they were listening to their own music. And so if you're receiving less anesthesia, you feel less anxious. The other thing was they were discharged sooner, which, I mean, so with those kinds of science-based, evidence-based studies, it brings music more clout, music therapy, mm-hmm. as well as the interest and the use. So, yeah. So now I went as the only music therapist, but now we have about 12 in the hospital system in at UH, and it's continuing to grow.
Yeah, in our remaining moments, I want to ask you. It's growing at the hospital where you founded the art and music therapy. At the University Hospitals Case Medical Center. It's growing there thanks to your brilliant work and witness. I'm curious as to whether or not you see evidence that music therapy across the country is being accepted by doctors who, to your earlier point, can be a bit curious and not trusting of music therapy. But I'm just curious writ large whether or not what you did in Cleveland is being scaled up and being taken seriously across the nation. 1580. A quick programming note before I wrap this conversation with Dr. Lane. Got about 4 or 5 minutes left with her, but a quick programming note. Tomorrow, in the first hour of this program, there's a powerful new book that I was excited to get to receive some time ago, and I'm anxious to unpack it with you tomorrow in our first hour. The book is called King's Vibrato. King's Vibrato. Modernism, Blackness, and the Sonic Life of Martin Luther King Jr. It's the first book. As many of you know, I've written a book about Dr. King, a best-selling book called Death of a King, about the last year in his life, and I devour everything King-related. As you well know, you've heard me say it 1,000 times, I regard Dr. King as the greatest American this country's ever produced. That's my assessment. I'll never back down from that. But this book is the first book written about the Sonic MLK, about the sound of his voice. About what King was able to do with his presentation and his style that all begins with the way he delivers. The first book, and it's a powerful book, about King's vibrato, about the sonic life of Dr. King, and we're going to unpack that tomorrow, speaking of therapy and speaking of voice and song and healing and therapy. We're going to talk about the sonic MLK tomorrow in the first hour of this program. You don't want to miss that conversation. I'm excited about that dialogue, just as I've been to have had for this entire hour, Dr. DeForia Lane, talking about music therapy for physical and emotional healing. Right quick, Dr. Lane, any evidence that music therapy is being taken more seriously as treatment for physical and emotional issues all across the country?
Yes. Initially, the Veterans Administration centers were the primary hirers of music therapists. That eventually flowed into other hospitals and rehab centers. But recently, most recently, the National Institutes of Health have a devoted interest where they put their money for music therapy research, especially with neurologists, healthcare professionals throughout the United States. And I've been privileged to speak at some of their events. Renee Fleming is a part of the Kennedy Center for the Arts, and then NIH with Dr. Francis Collins, who I know has gone back to the lab, but he was the director at that time. Mm-hmm. And they are putting forth money, big dollars, for music therapy research along with doctors, neurologists, as I mentioned, so that we can bring more of the art and science of music to benefit patients.
Let me close on this note. I got 2 minutes left. Let me just say right quick, Renee Fleming, I've had the honor of spending time with privately and interviewed her a couple of times over the course of her illustrious career. What a great performer Renee Fleming is, mm-hmm. and an even better person. In the 2 minutes I have left, speaking of great people, Dr. Lane, I note that you have had a cancer battle yourself that you have had to fight. And for one who is using music therapy to help heal others, in the 2 minutes I have left, what was the experience like for you sorting, trying to essentially do therapy musically on yourself?
Yes. 40 years ago, I had breast cancer and was treated with 25 to 28 radiation treatments and then oral medicine. I couldn't fall asleep at night. My brain kept churning, so I used music to help me settle down. I also am a person that likes to talk, if you haven't figured that out by now. And one of the ways that I helped myself was to write lyrics to what I was thinking and feeling. I didn't want to bother people with all of the challenge. So the way I took it from the inside, churning inside me, I put it into words and music. And I was able, and people were able to listen and hear it better than being, in my opinion, labored. You didn't know this, I don't think, but just 6 weeks ago, I was diagnosed again, this time with uterine cancer. And I am in the process of going through treatment. And I'll be honest, it has been the most deepening, transforming time in my life. I'm certainly increasing my intimacy with the Lord, but also I'm using music in so many ways to support and reinforce those principles, those spiritual principles, those mental principles that I know to be true. And I'm singing a new song. So thank you for asking.
No, I appreciate you, your transparency and sharing that with us. It is a good thing that you love to talk, and in case you haven't figured out, I love to talk too, and that's a good thing because the two of us have had an amazing conversation. I'm just asking questions, but your responses have been inspiring, empowering, enlightening, and elevating. So I want to thank you for this conversation and close by saying, while I did not know the latter, I am, and I'm sure many others listening right now, will be pulling and praying for you in this fight. And I know a God that that can do it once. If he can do it once, he can do it again. He pulled you through one time, and I believe he can do it another time. So I will be pulling and praying for you in the weeks ahead. But thank you for your time, and all the best to you, Dr. Lane.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Good to have you on. More of Tavis Smiley, Lord willing, tomorrow morning on KBLA Talk 1580.
KBLA 1580 Santa Monica.